When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
My brand new book, Midwife Pip's Guide to a Positive Birth, is now available. So much more than a book, this is a guide that allows me to hold your hand through your birth preparation journey. With over a decade of experience and knowledge packed in to ensure you really are empowered in the way you deserve to achieve a positive birth, regardless of the twists and turns that crop up. Make sure that you get your hands on Midwife Pip's Guide to a Positive Birth book now and are empowered to have the birth experience that you deserve. Hello, I'm Pip and welcome to the Midwife Pip podcast, the home of expert information and real chats on all things pregnancy, birth and beyond. You may have spent hours, weeks and months planning and researching pregnancy and birth, but what about your plan for when your baby arrives? What hurdles may crop up? How can you prepare to make it as smooth as possible? And what are the realities of that extra and often forgotten fourth trimester? I am super excited for this week's guest to fill our mummy toolkits. Heidi from Positively Parenthood is an expert of little people, babies and toddlers and has just been through the fourth trimester with her newest family edition. So there is no better time to chat about its rawness. So welcome Heidi and how are you?
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm good. Yeah, as I was saying, the bedtime routine has just ended. Stepping straight into podcast recording. Nothing quite like the working mum juggle, is there really?
I know. But you know what I love about working with other mums? As if I said to someone who wasn't a mum, oh yeah, let's schedule the podcast for like 7 p.m. or 8 p.m. They'd be like, absolutely not. My working day finishes at 5. Whereas mums are like, yeah, brilliant. 7, 8 o'clock is perfect.
Exactly. Although I was kind of surprised when you said 7. I was like, wow, she must be really on it with her bedtime.
No, my husband's home. He's
doing well. Right, fine.
Just got out the bath. He's on it. He's really good at bedtime actually. But yeah, he's usually like an 8 o'clock sleeper.
Okay, fine. Okay, that makes much more sense. Because I was how is she doing this?
I'm definitely not that good. Absolutely not. Dear. That's why I speak to people like you, Heidi, who are that good. You managed to get 3 down on your own, so that is incredible. Now, your youngest is 6 months now. So although I'm sure it's probably been a little bit of whirlwind, the fourth trimester is probably still very raw in your mind, I imagine.
Yeah, it really is. And do you know what? Even though she's my third and even though, you know, I literally do sleep and reflux and colic for a living, if you like, for want of a better phrase, this time round actually has been the most emotional and the rawest and the most challenging. Which is insane. You would almost think like the more babies you have, the easier it gets. But no, that wasn't to be. So yes, I'm still very much in it, even if I'm not physically in the first 4 months. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what the fourth trimester is, right? The first sort of 4 months or 16 weeks postpartum. And I think it's really good to recognize that as a trimester. I don't know about you. We're certainly me as a midwife. You're so focused on, you know, you pass through trimester one into trimester two, trimester three, and then it's a bit like, whoa, what happens now?
Yeah, exactly. And I think there's such a big expectation now of mothers to just kind of crack on. You know, actually, I was doing some research recently and it talks about, you know, like different cultures and they have 40 days in bed or 3 months in bed or there's all these different rules, whereas we don't really have that. And actually, you have to struggle to convince people to do, I'm sure you know this as a midwife, like a week in bed and a week on the sofa. You know, that almost seems like, oh, it's a bit much. I probably should crack on. Whereas the reality is very different. Like, it should be weeks, months and ongoing, right?
Yeah, I know. But I think it's so hard in society because I'm a big fan of rest in the postpartum. But I think for my family setup, for example, we live really rural and my husband was straight back to work. Finney was born on a Friday and he was back on the Monday. And our family are hours away. So it was a bit like I had to get up because who was going to get the groceries and who was going to take the baby to the midwife appointment at the local hospital that wasn't really near where I live. And those kind of pressures on us now are very different to what they were a generation or two ago.
Yeah.
And so I think our rest sometimes has to also look a little bit different. So if you're someone that can't lie in bed, actually, how can we get rest in other ways? So for me, it was like breathing, like just doing some breath work to calm my nervous system down, change the game. And I think it's looking at it in different ways, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And also just realizing that you can't do it all. So, you know, do the things that you need to do, like the grocery shopping for food and feed your baby. But, you know, does the kitchen floor need to be mopped? Absolutely not. Like, do you need to fold your clothes? No, it's good. Like a chair wardrobe is fine for the first few months. So it's
or
just working
2 years,
out.
Right?
Yeah, or long, forever. It's just working out because, yeah, we used to live, obviously, this whole idea of a village, we used to live near a family or at least in neighborhoods, you know, apart from neighbors. Like, where do you hear the sort of term neighborhood now, where I used to get as a child left with my next door neighbors who are very elderly whilst mum like went to the supermarket. Like, that just doesn't, there's no way. We have an old lady next door, there's no way I'd be like, hey, can you just have them whilst I pop the Sainsbury's? Like, it just wouldn't happen. No. So it's totally different.
Oh, we should so try that though, shouldn't we? But also I think that's where we need to bring it back in a little bit, actually. If you've got friends with young kids, allowing that to be normal again, because actually it's fine and it's great for them and it's great for you.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we're very lucky. We have, none of our parents are around or nearby, not at least not near enough to sort of pop in. But we have one auntie who's sort of a 10-minute drive, and we just ask her. I've got to the point where I have to stop worrying about asking people, especially with three. This is what I've really learned: stop worrying what they'll think and just say, do you know what, is there any chance you could do the school run because I need to do XYZ? And actually most of the time they're happy to say yes. So I think it's also that just asking for support when you need it, even if it feels difficult, because it then starts to become a bit easier the more you do it, I think.
Yeah, and actually when you're on the other end of that, when someone asks you to look after their child or help out, actually there's nothing more of a privilege, is there, than someone entrusting you with their child. Like when someone says, oh, can you look after my little one for a little bit? I'm like, yes, like, thank you. That's such a privilege for you to you to trust me with them.
I think that's important with regards to the fourth trimester, because I know we wanted to talk about like some tips and stuff, but actually asking for help if you need it, whether that's if you're lucky enough to have family or even like a really good friend, if you're struggling. I'm sure we'll come on to the emotional side of it, but it's just that sort of just ask, can you come, but can you also bring dinner? Because my baby keeps, you know, vomiting everywhere. We're trying to sort the reflux. I'm exhausted and I just want to eat and I need some food. So I'd love to see you, but can you bring dinner with you? That sort of thing.
Definitely. And actually, if you can't practically find someone to help, and you're financially able, can you do things like we filled our freezer with cooked meals so that there was just stuff we could chuck in the oven? So what can you do otherwise that perhaps doesn't involve a physical person, but still actually takes that pressure off and allows you to look after yourself?
Yeah, exactly.
And yeah, definitely always leave the cleaning. Always.
And even if you're, you know, someone's pregnant listening, like batch cooking in advance. So I'm sure you've done all of these tips before, but it's just so important to make your life easier, because really when baby arrives, your priority is your recovery from birth and your baby, and obviously your relationship if you've got a partner at home. But otherwise it's just kind of getting into that bubble, isn't it? And nothing else really matters too much as long as you're feeding yourself.
Yeah, like literally eat when you can, sleep when you can, then you're done, aren't you?
Simple.
Do your pelvic floors as well, they kind of help. So for those listening that actually you've never heard of the fourth trimester before, I think we've just probably summarized it quite nicely. The first 4 months after having a baby, where really the focus is on you, your recovery, getting to know your baby and navigating this new beautiful but slightly crazy time in your life. Heidi, talk to me about your fourth trimester. You've done it 3 times. What are some of the realities for you? Because I know this is your work, right? You are so well advanced in the evidence, you know, what we should do and what's helpful. But I found during my own pregnancy and birth, it's really different when you're in it yourself than when you've got your kind of professional hat on.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know what, it's very different for me now to what it was. So my eldest is 5.5. So 5.5 years ago, I had my first baby. the birth was literally not ideal in terms of sort of what I'd planned and things like that. You know, had induction, ended up in theatre with a placenta removal, etc. So I would say I was in shock for quite a long time. But because I'd always done babies, so my background is nannying, night nannying, maternity nursing, like I just know babies. I actually kind of found it pretty okay. And I sort of felt almost a bit guilty because I was like, oh, this is fine. Had number two, similar sort of thing, but then had number three, and she had all sorts of sort of stuff going on. We've got tongue tie, we've got reflux, we've got something called a disorganized swallow. She couldn't even breastfeed properly. And honestly, like mentally, it knocked me for six because I thought, you know, I will know what I'm doing. I have done it twice already before, like you say. And it actually just opened up to me that real vulnerability that parents feel in that time, because if I'm super honest, the first two times around I was actually okay. I was cool with it. I was, you know, just did what I had practiced and what I knew and what my profession had taught me, so I actually didn't find it difficult. Whereas third time, I think I probably identify most with what sort of your average parent goes through, which is that overwhelm of like, why won't they feed, why won't they sleep, you know, why won't they take a bottle, all of those questions that go through your mind when you're, you know, 6 weeks in and trying to rock your baby to sleep and wondering what on earth you did yesterday that's different to today, because yesterday they went down fine and today they're not going down at all. And it's that sort of up and down roller coaster, isn't it, that makes it so challenging.
Yeah, it is. And also I think the lack of support available to parents, and that's definitely something that shocked us when we were brand new parents, was you kind of felt like you always had a port of call in pregnancy. And then you're like, oh, 2 weeks, two months postnatal, you're like, what do we do? What are we meant to be doing? I remember being like, how do I play with a baby?
Yeah.
Like, that's way out of my scope as a midwife, where babies come into the world and then 2 weeks later we've, you know, discharged you. So yeah. I have no idea about this whole baby and child thing. I remember like, how do I play? And I felt really guilty that as a mum, I was like, I don't know what I meant to do. Yeah. And I think that's a real challenge for mums, and it leads to a lot of guilt and probably a lot of mental health concerns as well, because you feel like that should just be a natural thing and you should just know because you're now a mum. But there's no pre-qualification, is there?
No, exactly. And I'm so lucky that I have had all of that knowledge to go into then becoming a parent, so I sort of, exactly as you say, like knew what to do because it's been what I'd practiced. But I think if you don't have any of that experience and you haven't held a baby 5 years since, you know, your friend last had one or whatever else, that is so overwhelming. And it's, you know, where do you look for advice? Because it's really hard, isn't it, right now? You've got so many different opinions on social media. It's, you know, there's black and white to everything. There's cancel culture. And it's sort of like, as a new parent, what's true? What do I believe? And I think one of the things that we look at in our works, we deal a lot with sleep primarily, a lot of baby sleep stuff. We actually try and tap into a parent's instinct. Like, what does your gut say is right for you right now? Rather than what the textbook says or what that Instagram post says or what that blog reads, what do you actually want to do with your baby? So when it comes to sleep, you know, is that co-sleeping or is that setting up a routine so that they'll go down nicely on their own in their basket? Like, it's entirely up to you, but really trying to tap into that, yeah, that intuition, because I think it's been lost slightly actually. Because of the bombardment of, you know, I'm one of those people who puts out information on social media, so are you. So I'm not going to sort of say, oh, it's all bad. It's not at all. There's loads of great information, but it's trying to pick apart which bits sit right for you as a parent. And when you're exhausted, slightly irrational and lack of sleep, and trying to recover from birth, that's really, really hard.
This week's episode is sponsored by a brand I love, iCandy. From its roots in London's fashion design and manufacturing scene, iCandy has uniquely been owned and directed in the UK by the same family for almost 90 years. Now proudly in its fourth generation, the Appels and their extended iCandy family remain completely focused on the best of British craftsmanship, designing and engineering innovative quality products. iCandy's talented British-based in-house team consistently push the boundaries of both product design and sustainability, creating a wide range of stylish, functional, and quality pushchairs, high chairs, and accessories. Everything has been thoughtfully crafted to fit seamlessly into every parent's lifestyle. From the iconic Eye Candy Peach, which offers double functionality on a single footprint, to the Eye Candy My Chair, an innovative, multifunctional high chair that transforms into a beautifully crafted piece of furniture for your child. Eye Candy future-proofs the life cycle of every product so that it grows with each family. So no matter where your family is at right now, Eye Candy has got you covered. Check out their website, eyecandyworld.com, or head to iCandyWorld UK on Instagram to find out more.
And I think the thing that's different about our generation, Heidi, is that prior we didn't have social media and other influences, whereas now we've got parents and grandparents giving us this advice, and then we're seeing this new advice on social media or on the internet, and then, you know, you might have your healthcare practitioner giving you another bit of advice, and you're like, I've just been told six different conflicting mm-hmm. things, and often by really well-meaning people. And I remember day three, so for you and I, we know what day three when you're breastfeeding looks and feels like with a new baby, and my little boy fed constantly. I don't think he stopped. We, like, you know, we saw every hour, day and night. And I remember my mum saying to me, you're just not feeding him enough, he must be hungry, you're gonna have to give him formula. And I was like, thankfully, with a midwife hat, you know, this is cluster feeding, this is normal, blah, blah, blah. But I remember saying to my husband, if I wasn't a midwife, this would be the moment that I stopped breastfeeding, because that would have been my only bit of advice. I come from a bottle feeding family, and that would be the only thing that would have been my support. Mm-hmm. And I think actually how powerful it is to therefore have that realistic expectation of some of the challenges of the fourth trimester, which just makes it so much easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's really hard though, isn't it? Because when you're pregnant, all you want to do really is prep for the birth. You want to make sure you get the birth you want, and what do I need to do, and what's that going to look like, and, you know, what date it's going to be, and when am I going to meet my baby. You don't really look much past that point. So with our newborn sleep stuff, so we have a newborn sleep course, and everyone sort of like raves about it, but when they've got a 6, 7, or 8 week old or a 10 week old, not in advance, because it's really hard to convince people that they need to know about that stuff. But once baby arrives, they're like, why didn't I know this sooner? You know, why do they not teach this in antenatal? So it's very, very difficult, because I think your head when you're pregnant is in one place, and then baby arrives, and as you say, quite rightly, you just don't have a clue what to do. Mm-hmm. And then whilst you're tired, you've got to pick up all of this information. So yeah, it's a challenge. It's really tough.
Yeah, and definitely, and totally, in an ideal world, right, we'd have it all beforehand. But then I think, is that information overload? It's almost like we need to do it beforehand, but not have the pressure of taking it in, I suppose. Yeah. So then afterwards it feels like, oh, okay, I can recap on this now. Yeah. Like, let's really delve into it a little bit more. But I had a bit of a vague idea, a little bit of a guideline, or at least knowing where to go. So when it feels tough, you're not like, what do I go to? You're like, ah, I know, I've got the likes of you with Positively Parenthood, or I've got something that I can go to. So you know where that place is going to be. And I often say to mums that plan to breastfeed, put on your fridge where your local lactation consultant is, the breastfeeding hotline number, your local breastfeeding support group, so that when it is tough, because there's always tough moments, isn't there, in the postnatal period, you already know where you're going. You haven't got to figure that out.
It's really important. And I think you're right. I think especially when it comes to breastfeeding, if you choose to breastfeed, then obviously getting as much support with that as possible. You know, I have been doing this job for over, 15 plus years. I was a maternity nurse. I used to sit in mum's bedrooms at night and hold breast pumps onto their boobs whilst they cried, and bring the baby into their bedroom whilst they breastfed. I'm a trained breastfeeding counsellor. Like, I have done it, but I was crying whilst I was breastfeeding because it wasn't quite right. I needed help. I needed to speak to, in the end, I think 3 or 4 professionals. Like, it's hard sometimes, and knowing where to go, I think, is really important. So that's a really good tip. Like, know in advance, have that information. So all you then need to do is pick up the phone rather than trawl through pages of Google or Instagram to try and find out, you know, who there is locally to help you.
And actually, I wonder, just linking back to what you said previously, Heidi, about gut instinct in motherhood, was you knowing you needed help with breastfeeding, was that a bit of a gut instinct thing? Because I know often we hear women say, oh, but they said it looked fine, but I just knew it wasn't quite right.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. We use it so much in the work that we do. And I knew straight away, she did one great feed had a beautiful birth in the kitchen, like home birth. She was amazing. It was fab. She fed and it didn't hurt until the first feed. And I was like, oh, because the boys would not latch for like 3 days each because they both had significant tongue tie. So I had a sort of a bit of a false start. I was like, here we go. But then as soon as, like sort of day one kicked in, I was like, this is not right. And you just, I had the experience of two others, but I do think you just know. So I remember with my first being in hospital and he wouldn't latch at all. And I kept asking the staff on the postnatal ward, like, is it normal in an induction for a baby sort of not to latch? And they were like, no, it's fine. Like, just keep trying, whatever, whatever. I did not get any decent information at all at the time. And then as soon as I spoke to her, actually, it was our osteopath, and I said, is it really normal for babies not to latch if they've been induced? And she was like, yeah, we see it all the time. And I was like, oh, thank God. Like, it's not just me imagining that he won't latch. That's actually a thing. So I do think your gut instinct is so important. And I think whether it's feeding, whether it's their comfort, whether it's, you know, you being told actually babies just cry, that's just what they do, whether it's their broken sleep, significantly broken sleep being normalized, if your gut instinct is telling you that there's something else going on, even if you've had one opinion that says no, they're fine, or no, that's normal, get a second opinion. Mm-hmm. Sometimes get a third opinion, or just go elsewhere, because I just think it's really powerful. I think you should follow it if you believe that there's something else that could be affecting your baby, like, for example, a sensitivity to a certain food protein that's passing through your milk, or like silent reflux or something like that.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Oh, 100%. It's so powerful, that gut instinct. I remember our little boy, he stopped breastfeeding just before he was 17 months. And within 10 days was covered head to toe in eczema, like from nothing to everything. And we did that, you know, back and forth, try this cream, try that cream. And in the end, I was like, this isn't working. We need something a bit more. And we finally got referred to the right person who within a week, his skin was beautiful again. And it's just sometimes, and you shouldn't have to fight that corner, but sometimes you do. And not giving up, I think, is really important.
Yeah, unfortunately you do. I mean, you know, it's difficult, isn't it? Like, we live in a society with an amazing healthcare system, but also in its own way has quite a few flaws in terms of reaching the right person or getting the right support. So it's really, really tough. And I think you just have to advocate for yourself, much like you do in birth, right? You just have to advocate for yourself and your baby.
Yeah, 100%. So what can parents do, Heidi, in your professional and personal experience times three, to make the fourth trimester a little bit easier, or just feel that preparation, even if it's not, you know, meticulous, knowing exactly what's happened, but having a bit of an idea so it's not quite such a shocker?
Yeah. So we've covered off already like two of the main things that I think, which is prep, like preparation is key. Even if you just read a little bit, I think some level of preparation around what to expect once baby's here, not about the birth. Obviously, that's all great. And you've got several separate podcasts, I'm sure, all about that. But preparation around sort of, you know, what normal sleep looks like, what you might expect in terms of how often you might be up in the nighttime, all of those lovely sort of newborn sleep facts that actually, like I said, pre-birth might seem insignificant, but when baby arrives, you'll be like, oh, I'm so glad I read that, because actually this is making me feel more comfortable that this is something I could expect or whatever else. So, you know, baby being really close to you, that sort of classic kind of up every couple of hours during the nighttime in the first couple of weeks whilst feeding kind of gets itself established, that sort of thing. So knowledge is power, I think, is really, really important. I always say that to my clients, knowledge is power. A little bit of reading, get prepped, get your food in, that sort of thing. We've talked about all of that. Use your instinct, as I said, is really, really important. So if you think something isn't quite right, like my baby won't latch, as I said, get an opinion, get a second opinion, and keep pushing on that. And then for me, I think it's about finding your own style and not taking too much a sort of notice, if you like, of what others around you are doing. Mm. I think that's key, because I don't know if you were part of like an antenatal group, but you'll always have people who are doing things differently to you in parenting. And I think that's sometimes really difficult if they're doing it, you know, if someone's co-sleeping and you're not, or someone's baby is, I don't know, sleeping through the night at 10 weeks and yours isn't. It's that constant comparison. And we live in a society where we constantly compare ourselves to, whether it's our friends, we've got WhatsApp to compare to, we've got social media, Instagram. And again, it comes back to that, like, do what is right for you. You do you. Don't worry if that's not the same as your best friend or whoever else in your WhatsApp group. So I think it's just this kind of power of leaning into what feels right. And that applies to feeding, you know, breastfeeding, bottle feeding, whatever you want to do is all good. Combination feeding, whatever. Sleeping, co-sleeping, like we said earlier, getting into a routine, whatever works for you. So I think that takes time, though. You're not going to know that on day two, or probably even week two either. Mm. You need to take time to understand what kind of parent you want to be and feel like you're going to be, and also time to learn your baby too, because what works for one baby doesn't necessarily always work for another baby. So I just think this fourth trimester is as much about kind of being looked after as it is about, like, learning the new way of doing things for yourself and learning more about what you are like as a mother. So it's that lovely phrase of, like, the birth of a mother, isn't it? And it's learning, what does that mean to me? You know, am I really practical and want to crack on with work? And I don't know what you had to do in terms of your work, but I've had to work all the way through all three of mine. I had no maternity leave. So I've had to make decisions that have aligned with that, such as babies who have naps, because if they didn't nap, there's no way I could run a company, you know, if they were, like, glued to me 24/7. That might not be someone else's reality. So for someone else, that might look like 6 months of co-sleeping and contact naps. And that is also brilliant. Do you know what I mean? So it's just finding your own way.
Oh, definitely. One of the things you said that really resonated with me, Heidi, because when I always think, once you kind of settled into it, so once I got sort of, I don't know, 10, 11 months down the line, and I really started to reflect on that early stage and the first few months, really, I suppose, kind of continuing on from the fourth trimester, the thing that I remember saying to myself, that if I'm blessed enough to go on this journey again, the one thing I want to change is less comparison around that newborn period. Because I think, especially as a new mum, and there isn't, you know, if there isn't much else to go against, it's quite a natural thing to see the other children at baby groups, or, you know, the mums you're WhatsApping, and have that comparison. And really, that was a thief of so much joy for us in that early period. You know, why is he not doing that yet? Or why is he doing this yet? And why are they sleeping through the night and he's not? And it's really, really hard. And that's one of the things that I'll definitely take away for, you know, any future children we might have, is that actually we are on our own path, and we're going to do it at our own time, our own pace, and it's going to look really different to everybody else's. And that is absolutely fine.
Yeah, exactly. I had the same even with my third. So had a really quite massive work project that kind of kicked off when she was 2 months old. And with her reflux, she would only nap for 30 minutes. So I'd do the classic, you know, like rock, rock, rock to sleep, put her down, creep to the chair in the bedroom, sit there with my laptop, blah, 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 blah. And when she woke up after 30 minutes, I felt really, I was never like cross at her, but I just felt really, like, it was really unfair. And I was thinking, well, my others did this, why is she not doing it? And a lot of the time I spent stressing about it would have been better off just put into, like, being a little bit more present with the situation, potentially. And I got there in the end, don't get me wrong. In the end, I had to just go, this is what it is. Like, if anyone's listening who's had a baby with reflux quite significantly, it is very different to your kind of average baby journey. And it can be really quite hard, quite lonely. And they do different things to what other babies do too, including really short naps. So it can be really, really difficult to even compare with, like, you know, two children that you've had yourself, or your best friend's child, or whatever else. And I just think, be okay with your situation. But also, really important to take away is, if you're not okay, you can change it. So I think one of the things that I wanted to kind of just touch on is that if you have a newborn who's not able to be put down and who won't sleep at all, it's really difficult, because we've kind of ended up normalizing loads of stuff with babies that actually doesn't have to be normal. And it's that whole, like, it's common for sure. Don't get me wrong. They love a cuddle. But to the point where you can't put them down, that's not normal. So that's when you can reach out, whether it's to, you know, me or people like me. Because what we can look at, okay, is, well, if baby doesn't want to go down ever and you're struggling because this starts to have a knock-on impact on your mental health, then what's going on? you know, are they taking in too much air? They've got a hidden tongue tie. You're not to know because you're not a tongue tie practitioner. But actually, if you took them to an osteo or tongue tie practitioner, would that come up? Are they happy with their tummies? Like, happy tummies pretty much means happy babies and happy sleep, if I'm honest. Like, it's massive. So if your newborn seems to be crying a lot or just generally unsettled and just will never sleep, is something going on with their tummy that, again, isn't that obvious to like a new parent? But if he came to me, I'd be like, right, okay, here are the things we can do. So definitely the comparison thing, but also definitely thinking, well, if I want to change things, even in that, you know, fourth trimester, you absolutely can, because there is help out there. You don't just have to, it's really cliche, you don't just have to survive it. Like, you can actually thrive with a newborn if you're finding things difficult. Some people won't. Some people will fly by and others will just be like, what is this? What have I done?
we're all different, aren't we? Like, we all have different needs. So I always found, you know, my little boy was always quite an early waker. So he's got better. It's like 6:30 now, which is very acceptable. But it was always like a 5 a.m. But actually for me, that was great because I'm an early riser. So as long as we got a good night's sleep prior, I was like, I can function fine like this. Whereas some of my friends are like, oh my goodness, if they don't sleep until 7, I am done for the day. And that's where it's okay to have different routines, isn't it? And different schedules.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it's really important when it comes to sleep to know that, you know, I'm not saying sort of sleep through the night in the first few months, because that's not what's going to happen, but they are capable actually of sleeping. Like, babies are born knowing how to sleep. There's totally that capability there. It normally comes down to in the fourth trimester. It's not really even to do with things like self-settling and stuff. It's more to do with comfort levels and air intake and making sure that they're winded properly and not like overtired. So it's really basic stuff, which, going back to what we spoke about at the beginning, I feel like parents should be told from the beginning, but they're just not, unless you happen to stumble across, you know, this podcast or my Instagram, whatever else. Mm-hmm. And therefore we go through that whole entire first few months thinking this is just what babies do. But actually they can be a lot, you know, they can cry less and they can sleep more if you have those few facts of information. Like, knowledge is power, basically.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. Knowledge is power, especially when you are navigating lots of new stuff and different times when you've got a newborn baby. Having as much prepared as you can is super, super helpful. Mm-hmm. I feel like you've given us so many top tips, Heidi. So this is going to be a challenge. But whenever anyone comes on the podcast, I always ask to finish with three of their top tips or highlights. This could be your highlights because you have shared lots of tips already.
Yeah. Okay. So first things first, actually, I'm going to go with tips. I'm going to try and sort of weave in some tips to what I've already done. I think there are a few more that I can share with you. The first one is busting a myth, really. And I would just say, babies need to be winded. Wind your baby. Bottle fed baby, breastfed baby, wind your baby. Wind is like the number one disruptor of newborn sleep. And quite often is the cause of those, like, you know, 10 minute, 20 minute naps that you're like, oh, I put them down, but then they just wake up after 15 minutes. So I think winding is so important. And I've got tons of reels and stuff on my Instagram of like different positions to wind babies in and things like that. So wind your baby. Secondly, I'm going to roll with actually probiotics, if I'm allowed to.
Yeah.
So I'm a big fan of a lot of the work I do is around infant kind of gut health and how that impacts their temperament and also their sleep. So you will be doing both yourself and baby a favor if you choose to give probiotics, because that can really strengthen their tummies, which in itself can then have a knock-on impact later on, obviously, with their sleep. Because if they're happy in their tummies, they tend to sleep a bit better and a bit more easily. Gosh, and number three, I would just say, yeah, advocate for what you feel you need and your baby needs. So that might be a second opinion at the doctor. That might be talking to someone else who's, you know, in the sort of baby field, who might have a slightly different opinion. So kind of just don't give up. It can be better than it feels if you feel like you're struggling. I think that's really important, because you don't just have to struggle on through.
And actually, that's really reassuring for anyone listening that is currently finding the fourth trimester a little bit tough. So Heidi, thank you so much for joining me. I hope you have three sleeping little people now. You're an absolute star. Thank you for sharing so much wisdom.
Oh, absolute pleasure. Lovely to be here. Thank you, Pip.
Before you head off, I just need to tell you something. 68% of you who listen to my podcast have not hit the subscribe button. So can you do me a favor? If you have ever enjoyed listening, and hit subscribe now. It makes a huge difference and helps me to keep bringing you episodes. The bigger the podcast, the bigger the guests, and the more women we can reach and help. Thank you for subscribing, and I look forward to chatting again soon.
Hi, my name is Kay Adams, and to be honest, I'm not so good with the aging process, so I enlisted my old chum, the filter-free Cara McKenzie, to advise.
Could you imagine being a porn star? The room would need to be really hot for me to strip off.
To be honest, she's not much help, but she is rather amusing. And along with some great guests, Joe Brand, Andy Oliver, Anton Dubek, Ruth Langsford, and Craig Revel Horwood, darling, we are learning how to be 60. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.